Hello and welcome back to In Bed with Lisa. Today I have a fantastic special guest who is focusing on men's health. For a change, we're taking the focus off of vulvas for today. I would love to welcome Justin Dubin, who is a urologist and men's health specialist focusing on male infertility and sexual medicine. Plus, he's the co-host of the Man Up podcast. Welcome, Justin.
Lisa, thank you so much. Greetings from Miami. This is very, very, very cool to be able to get on and do this with you. I'm really honored. So thanks again for having me. This is awesome. So I'm ready to get into
it. Yes, I can't wait as well. We're happy to talk about penises for a change. Let's start with the basics. What are the common stigmas that you find surrounding men's sexual health that you tend to encounter in your practice? I'm sure there are millions, but what are like the ones that most easily come to your mind?
I think really for me, there's two. Believe it or not, even though erectile dysfunction is the most common sexual health issue men deal with, and that about 50% of all men will have the experience of having erectile dysfunction, unfortunately, I think it is still one of those topics that guys don't want to talk about. And not only do they not want to talk about it, often they don't want to take responsibility for it, unfortunately. We actually had done a study several years ago where we surveyed women and asked them if they had experienced erectile dysfunction with a partner and whether they had been blamed with it by their partner. And about one in seven women had said that, you know, they had actually experienced male blame for erectile dysfunction, which had ended up compromising, their relationship with their partner. The female partner was actually had increased stress, increased worry. They were more willing to end a relationship because of the erectile dysfunction. So, you know, I think one of the problems that we see is that, you know, it's a lack of responsibility and understanding of what causes erectile dysfunction still. And there's this stigma that it can't be me, you know, I'm a guy, this shouldn't be happening. And so we seek outward, unfortunately, sometimes. And I think communication, both with your doctor and with your partner, are very important in addressing these things. You know, ED prevalence is, I said, 50% of people on average, men on average, will experience it. It does increase with age, 40% in their 40s, 50% of men in their 50s, 60% in their 60s, 70% in their 70s. But even in these younger guys, some of the data suggests that up to even 30% of men under the age of 40 have erectile dysfunction. So it's not only important to address the issue because, you know, there's a couple of things that could cause erectile dysfunction, you know, heart disease, smoking, diabetes, depression, anxiety. There's so many different layers to it that by not addressing it, you're really missing potentially issues with your health. And, you know, you could potentially be compromising a part of your relationship with your partner. So that's one.
Yeah. First one.
I'm sorry. That was just one.
I'm going to dig into that more, but carry on.
Two is male infertility, which I think is a huge one that is we're starting to understand really is something that needs to be addressed more. Now, guys don't want to talk about this, and we know that about 15% of couples, one in seven couples, struggle with fertility. And there's this really unfair burden on the female partner on this idea of, you know, fertility care. And it seems like there's a lot of pressure on women when it comes to fertility. And, you know, there's always these conversations where it comes to, you know, reproductive endocrinologist, gynecologist, going the female partner going to see a doctor. But guess what? I mean, I know this kind of sounds crazy, but it makes sense if you think about it. 50% of the time in couples who have struggle with fertility, 50% of the time there is a male factor component. In fact, 30% of the time it is a strictly male factor component that is causing the fertility issue. So what does this mean? It means that not only women should be getting evaluated for their fertility. Guys need to talk about this, and they need to be supportive of their partner, and they also need to figure out if they have these issues. There've been some really good studies. You know, there was one out of Northwestern showing that, you know, only 30% of men who were concerned about their fertility were really likely to discuss concerns with their doctor. So we have literal data confirming these things. You know, I could tell you anecdotally, you know, most of the time it is, you know, the male partner and their female partner in my office. And it's usually the female partner answering all the questions because the guy doesn't know or may not want to talk about it. So it's just really, really important. You know, it takes two to tango. If you're going through this process with someone, you really need to also get evaluated, because it's not always it's not always the female partner. In fact, most of the time there is a male factor involved. And you know, if you're trying to create a family, you really need to do everything possible. And that's partially getting checked out.
Wow. Okay. So the first thing I just want to say is the correlation between those first two stigmas that you mentioned are, it just seems that in both instances, there's a lack of wanting to admit it. Like, there's a sense of denial, and then there's a sense of shifting responsibility. And why do you think that is?
You know, I think that to some degree, I think guys just, we like to be that macho guy. We like to be that guy who, you know, you have this picture of like The Rock. I don't know if like Liver King, that guy on Instagram, or, you know, all these tough guys who, you know, don't need to talk about their feelings because they're just these masculine dudes who have everything going for them. You know, they fathers, they're strong, they're jacked, they're energetic, they have big muscles. And I think that every guy to some degree pictures themselves that way, or they picture themselves as the head of the household. And by acknowledging that they have an issue, by acknowledging that these things may be a problem for them, I think that they're really scared of saying like, hey, maybe I'm not that person that you were interested in or that you pictured me as. And I think that can be very, very scary for people. And
yeah,
you know,
and, you know, it's interesting because when it comes to sexual health, as a specific part of that kind of macho man idea that we have in our heads, like so many of us, regardless of culture, it seems to be quite this standard that we have expectations of what a man is and what a man does and how a man provides and how a man communicates and how a man has sex. So, and how a man procreates, right? There's just like this unrealistic standard that we put on it. So when there's something like erectile dysfunction that you mentioned, that then, you know, it's hard to own it, because what does that say about you as a man? But the truth is, it doesn't, right? Because it happens to so many people. It's part of life.
Well, what does it also say to you about as a man? If you, I'm just trying to, you know, twist the narrative so people can understand maybe why they should reach out, is like, that you don't want to acknowledge a problem that you have, right? Like, don't you want to be the person who's fixing the problem, fixing the relationship, fixing these issues? And by not acknowledging it, that's kind of really not the best thing you should be doing. I mean, I'm not trying, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, if you are a problem solver, if you picture yourself as the head of the household trying to figure out all these things, isn't this the best thing for you and for your partner to acknowledge these problems and talk about them? Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, obviously sex is personal. Having a family is very personal. And when you bring in the bedroom, you know, into your outside world, just outside of it, to other people, that can be very embarrassing. And some people don't want to talk about it. But, you know, it can really, we can't do anything. And I tell my patients all the time, or I tell people all the time, it's like, listen, there are so many ways we can help you. But if you don't tell us what your problem is, there's no way I can help you ever. It's just a fact. Mm.
Brilliant. That's it. There are so many solutions out there. And I guess your position as a healthcare provider allows you to validate what people are experiencing and normalize it, and show them that this is just one part of their life.
Absolutely. So
let's look a little bit deeper at erectile dysfunction, if that's okay. That's a big umbrella term. I know this, I don't think this is one of the questions I'd prepared, but I really want to go here. So what's What forms of erectile dysfunction are there? And so if somebody listening is experiencing something, if they think there's something not quite right, could you just like share a little bit about what they might be experiencing and what their next step could be?
Of course, this is a great question. So I think one of the highlights here that I want to say, if there's a theme here, is that sexual health is health. Okay, so sexual health, you know, believe it or not, and you're going to hear and understand as I describe the causes of erectile dysfunction here, is that sexual health, whether it's this, it could be fertility problems, it could be a sign or a symptom of other health problems. It could be a warning sign for other health, pending health problems. So it's not only important to address the sexual health problem because it's obviously you're not enjoying it and you want to have a better sex life, you want to have a better relationship, but it's also important because it may be a sign that other things in your health are not the way that they should be and that we need to explore these problems and address them before they get out of control. So to address your question now, you know, is this idea that what causes erectile dysfunction? So when I talk to my patients, when I talk to, you know, to people, I explain it and you need five things to get a good erection. If any one of these five things fails, you can potentially get erectile dysfunction. So the first thing is you need good blood flow to your penis. So, you know, there that can be compromised by several things. The big ones is heart disease, as well as, you know, things like smoking that can compromise your vessels. Now, we do know that having erectile dysfunction is, you know, what we call the canary in the coal mine for heart disease. So, you know, we know that guys who have erectile dysfunction, higher risk for cardiovascular events, heart attacks, stuff like that later on in life. So, oftentimes, I'm the first person to see these guys, and I will assess them for cardiovascular risk or send them to a cardiologist. So obviously, I don't think any of our listeners really ever want to have a heart attack. So, you know, these are just things, right, that you can think about. Yeah. Two is you need to have good nerves. Now, the nerves can be compromised by things like surgery. Some people have pelvic surgery, like a prostatectomy for prostate cancer. Some people have spinal cord injuries or traumas that can compromise those nerves. But the other thing that people don't realize is that you have diabetes. And diabetes is one of the real big problems with erectile dysfunction. It's one of the big reasons why people have erectile dysfunction. People don't realize it. You know, people often associate having, you know, finger issues, hand issues, foot numbness, other stuff, vision problems. But the nerves in your hands and your feet are much, much bigger than the nerves in your penis. So often the nerves that are in your penis are the first ones to go and you have erectile dysfunction. And I cannot tell you how many guys I've caught with diabetes or diagnosed with diabetes because, you know, they come in and the classic story is always for all of these things. I'll see a guy and he's like, hey, you know, I'm feeling great other than my erection. I don't have a good erection. And I'm like, okay, well, what's your medical problems? None. And when was the last time you went to the doctor? 40 years ago. So, you know, it's one of those things where you don't have a problem because you haven't been to the doctor in 40 years.
Yes.
And then I find out you have diabetes, you have high cholesterol, you have high blood pressure, all of these things obviously compromising your erection and somehow leading you to me before, you know, all the other things. So that's number two. Number three is you need good testosterone levels. We know that obesity, diabetes, other having a history of HIV, cancer treatment, these are all risk factors for having low testosterone. It's quite prevalent. If you want to go talk with a doctor, you know, that's a very, very important thing to do with regards to symptoms of low testosterone, which could be low libido, low energy, decreased muscle mass, breast development, depressed or mood changes, erectile dysfunction, obviously. There's a lot of signs and symptoms of low testosterone, so that's another important one. And we know that having low testosterone actually puts you at an increased risk for cardiovascular risk. So another risk factor for heart disease and heart attack and stroke and things like that. The last two are ones that I think a lot of people forget. And I always ask these because they don't go from below. They go from above. The first one is you need to be aroused. And I know that sounds funny, but and everyone's like, no, duh. But the truth is here that, you know, people are in relationships that they may not enjoy, or, you know, they're having difficulties in their relationships. And I often ask, are there any issues going on at home? Are you doing well? Mm. Are you okay there? Are you aroused by your partner? And, you know, some people say, and unfortunately this is true. It's like, I love my wife. I love my partner, but I've been with them for 25 years and I just, it's different. And, yeah. You know, this is where sex therapists come in. This is where, you know, relationship therapists come in. Because there's so much about sex that, as you know, is, you know, above the belt. There is a huge, huge mental component to it, which leads me to the last one is you need to be in a good state of mind. Now, I mm-hmm. quote Robin Williams on this one. He said, you know, God gave man a brain and a penis and only enough blood to control one at a time. So, you know, it's one of these things where if you are anxious, depressed, you know, your penis is not going to work. That blood is going straight to your brain. You're going to have higher cortisol levels. You're not going to get a good erection. Unfortunately, you know, if you have depression, anxiety, in the same manner, sometimes the medications that treat those things can also cause erectile dysfunction, low libido. So, you know, as you can see here, that theme of sexual health is health. Really, there are so many ways that your erections can be impacted by your lifestyle, your health overall, you know, your relationships, that, you know, talking about these things can elucidate other problems that we may not otherwise know.
Wow. Thank you. Five things you need to have an erection. They really encompass the whole of being a human, the whole experience. And there's so many different solutions then that come from that. And you really showed us just how far-reaching these issues can be. And all of these issues that we're experiencing as humans and as men and penis owners can certainly have an impact on the erection. We put so much importance on this erection. Can I just ask you, just to change tact slightly, is it possible for men to experience pleasure without an erection?
Yes, that is a great question. And the answer is yes. So your erection and your orgasm are two different components. You know, you can orgasm with a soft penis. You can have an erection and not orgasm, which I think most people have unfortunately experienced. But, yeah, so your orgasm is a different pathway from, you know, your ejaculatory as well as your erectile function. So I do often see men who struggle with erectile dysfunction who are not either able to, you know, take any intervention at that time because of health issues or desire. They are able to achieve an orgasm with a flaccid penis. So, you know, it's pretty interesting. And some people say, hey, I'm happy that way. Now, obviously, if you're not happy that way, you should go talk to a doctor. But I think it's a good point. Just because you have a less than an ideal hardness of your penis doesn't really mean that you can't orgasm. You absolutely can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for bringing that one in. I know about premature ejaculation and delayed ejaculation, and there's like a whole family of things that fall under that umbrella. Would you mind talking a little bit about those and like which ones are most common, and maybe if you have any solutions for them?
Yeah, so premature ejaculation is probably the more common one that I do see. It's by definition, you know, ejaculation that you have, you know, you're lasting less long than you would like to. And I think it's kind of important to stress that part, because on average, you know, people are not having sex for 2 hours here, right? Like, and for whatever reason, maybe it's, you know, porn, maybe it's other things, maybe it's when you were younger, people have in their mind, these guys, that they're going to last 20, 30 minutes. And it's just not the case. You know, erectile dysfunction, though, I mean, I'm sorry, premature ejaculation usually is about less than 2 minutes by our medical definition, 1 to 2 minutes. But still, you know, patients, you can have acquired, acquired or congenital premature ejaculation, meaning for acquired, meaning at some point you were, you know, going normal and then all of a sudden you're lasting 30 seconds. And then the congenital is, you know, I just always came fast. And, and so, you know, we still treat it pretty much the same way. There are several things to do. There are certain medications. But I usually delay, not to pun it, no pun intended. I usually don't go straight to the medications. Usually there's techniques. You can talk with a sexual therapist, with, you know, there's different approaches, which are more biofeedback kind of therapies. There's also using things like condoms, although people don't like that because it does decrease sensation. There's sprays out there that can, you know, desensitize your penis a little bit and help you last longer, which often helps people. But yeah, there are medications. Sometimes you can put on a low dose antidepressant because, as I alluded to before, you can have, you know, unfortunately that can decrease your libido and stuff, but at a very low dose, it can potentially help you with premature ejaculation. When it comes to delayed ejaculation is less common, but I feel like somehow I think it's becoming more discussed, or maybe more seen, and because maybe people are acknowledging it. It's just really this inability for guys to sometimes just achieve climax. And sometimes that when you're addressing this question, sometimes you want to know, is it just with a partner? Is it when you're masturbating? And that also goes with the other ejaculatory dysfunction things like premature ejaculation, right? So these are things you want to ask yourself. You want to bring up to your healthcare provider when you go talk to them. And, you know, delayed ejaculation is kind of difficult. It depends on if there's a source of it. Sometimes it's like a nerve issue or, you know, from an injury, or some people just kind of have it. And often I do send them to sex therapists. There's no really medications that we recommend per our guidelines at this time. Okay. One thing that I do recommend often is considering sex toys. There is, because one thing that's interesting about the penis that people don't know is, you know, vibratory sense and vibratory nerves are a lot different than tactile. So, you know, your penis has both. And sometimes getting that vibratory sensation with a sex toy can help people achieve orgasm. So that's something that I do often recommend looking into, for sure.
Great. Oh, I love that. Sex toys is a great suggestion, because I think people often think that vibrators are only really for vulvas, but there's certainly some great benefits to using it, like the shaft of the penis. There's certain areas that are going to love that feeling potentially. So it's worth a try. I've even seen there's a toy by Hot Octopus that is, you put a flaccid penis or any kind of penis in. Have you seen it? The pulse. And it has a vibrating plate. It can be hands-free, no erection required. I mean, that's just wonderful. Okay, so I wanted to also ask, when it comes to premature ejaculation, I've heard, I don't know if this is true, I wonder if you know, that you can try like an edging technique, like a squeezing or stop-starting technique to help to prolong the erection, I suppose.
Yes, you know, you can that's definitely, like, edging has become, I think, a more popularized term, surprisingly, in the last few years. But yeah, I think, you know, there's various approaches. You can pull out and then grab the tip of your penis, not aggressively, like to hurt yourself, but you can grab the tip of your penis, which, you know, can often cause a little bit of discomfort, preventing you from orgasming. You know, this edging idea is, you know, we do often recommend, if you want to try to keep going, is, you know, stop, perform some kind of other sexual activity that doesn't involve your penis. It's really not reinventing the world here, but you know, some people, you know, you come out, do some heavy petting, just doing some makeout. You can do oral sex on your partner. There's other things to prevent you from achieving that orgasm too soon. So yeah. I think that's a very fair point. And often these techniques are discussed with a sex therapist or a relationship therapist. But yeah, I think it's an excellent point.
Thank you. So it's, I love that you obviously have like a multidisciplinary approach, or you know kind of who can help with what. So let's bring it back then to your specialization. And how can people like you, how can healthcare professionals specifically play a role in, you know, supporting people who are experiencing erectile dysfunction and helping them to talk with their partners and just, where does your work fit in? Because I'm like trying to lead you into sex toys and techniques, but that's not what you're all about.
Well, I think I kind of disagree. I actually think I'm all about it. I think we should all be about it, you know, because I think talking about what we're talking about now is how healthcare providers can, you know, make a difference. And if a doctor is not talking about sex toys, even though, you know, I'm not selling them, I'm not, you know, then how are some patients going to ever know that they exist or that they should actually go seek them or go use them, you know? Because unfortunately, some people just consider them taboo, but they are truly a valuable resource for many, many people, and can enhance their relationships, they can enhance their sex life. So, you know, I think the key here is really, as a healthcare provider, to be open to communicate these things. Because if I'm uncomfortable or I'm not knowledgeable in the topic, then how the hell is my patient going to be comfortable or knowledgeable in the topic? And I think that part of that also is doing these things like coming on podcasts. One of the reasons why I created my podcast, Man Up Podcast, was because of these issues where people didn't want to hear it, or they didn't want to come into the office because they didn't want to, you know, have people see that they had a problem by sitting in the office, you know. And, you know, people started going online, and we know that people were going online. There was a study that came out in the States that, you know, about 20% of Americans go. I know it's obviously not just Americans, it's really South America. It's a universal thing, but I think it can be applicable to almost anywhere. You know, about 20% before Americans go to the doctor or seek medical advice, they 20% go to TikTok for healthcare advice, about 30% go to YouTube. I think 37% said that they trusted a social media influencer before they trusted a doctor because they felt they were more accessible for medical advice. And then, you know, another thing that was very concerning, a number that blew my mind, was that 50% of Americans actually had bought health, you know, supplements or some kind of health product online without consulting a doctor. So, you know, that's pretty crazy. So, you know, we have to be aware of what's going on out there so that we can address it. Because at best, these people are wasting their money and they're burning a hole in their account. At worst, they're harming their health by doing something or that they shouldn't be doing, or delaying their care for something more serious that they needed to see a healthcare provider for, or harming themselves just using a product that they shouldn't be using in the first place. And no one's held accountable because that's the way it goes sometimes. But so I think that, you know, education and having given you those numbers, I think a lot of the things that I'm interested in now is, you know, educating people online, giving them access to good, accurate information. I almost see it at this point as a term of preventative care, because if you prevent people from doing things that they shouldn't be doing, or, you know, buying something they shouldn't be buying, or harming them, delaying their care, you know, causing them to delay their care, you know, I think you're really doing someone a service. And and the faster that someone acknowledges their problems and then gets in the door, and once again, it doesn't have to be me that they have to see, it could be any healthcare provider, they're really helping themselves, they're helping their partners, they're helping their families and their friends if they want to be around for a while.
Wow, Justin, that is so true. And yeah, I mean, I think the piece about delaying care for potentially life-threatening and long-term conditions is really important. That's pivotal. That's what I've really taken from what you've said today. And so that's why it's such a huge gift that you're giving by doing the Man Up podcast. So you're the co-host of that podcast. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. So I'm the co-host along with my my co-host, Dr. Kevin Chu. He's out in LA. We did our training together at University of Miami, residency training. He stayed on and did his his fellowship in male infertility and sexual medicine at University of Miami. Now he's practicing in LA. And when we were fellows, you know, when I was at Northwestern, he was in Miami, we really did see that there was this need online, and where, you know, I think that there was a lot of resources online and podcasts talking about becoming, you know, leveling up and alpha this and all that BS, that, you know, but most of it was just provided by random people. There was never really many doctors. Obviously, you have people like Huberman Lab and, you know, and Joe Rogan have become very popular. And listen, they are what they are. I think Huberman does a very thoughtful stuff, but I think a lot of it sometimes is not practical to the normal human being. And that's more like biohacking stuff. And sometimes, you know, he is not a doctor. He says it himself. He is a PhD. He's a doctor, but he's not a medical doctor. Let me rephrase that. And obviously, he's a brilliant dude, but you don't know what you don't know. And I think that sometimes we wanted to have a resource of an actual urologist who sees this day in, day out to provide information. And we don't pretend to know everything. So we bring other people on to discuss topics that, you know, we want to learn about and that we think men should learn about. You know, I know this is being recorded now, but you know, we just had to talk about IVF and fertility, because the truth is that, you know, we had Natalie Crawford on. She's a prominent IVF doctor. That's the episode we came out this weekend, because, you know, part of it is understanding as a man what the female partner, what your partner may be going through. It's a mentally, physically, emotionally draining process, IVF. And to get that perspective, I think, can make you a better partner, and to understand how you can be a better partner and be better supportive is a huge component of this. And if you understand what women have to go through, sometimes it's going to motivate you to just go in and just, all you have to do is go see a doctor. So, you know, we try to break it down into more simplistic terms. I'm not asking everyone to reinvent the wheel here once again and say you need to change your life immediately, do 1,000 things and cold plunge and all that stuff. You know, I don't really think that that's the solution for 99.9999% of the population. And I think knowledge is power, and we can give you the power to, you know, make a decision, a good, accurate health decision on your life by destigmatizing these conversations, by educating you on what you need to know, and providing you with good resources to go and do those things. So that's really what our goal is on the podcast.
Amazing. So that is the Man Up podcast for evidence-based, medically accurate information that is going to support your sexual health, beneficial for men and women, I'm sure, as is this conversation that we've had today. I just wanted to say thank you so much for this, because, you know, as I said, like, a highlight for me has been like realizing that erectile dysfunction can be a red flag for other medical conditions. And then something that we started with that maybe we could just tie up a little bit now is that the idea that women often take the blame, whether it is given to them by their partner or just self-given, because women are very good at just taking the blame. You know, we just think, okay, the penis isn't working, must be something I've done, must be my body, must be this, you know. So I guess we're just wanting to re-shine a light and say, if there is something wrong, if there's something not working in the way it used to or has never worked in the way you think it might, seek help. Speak to a medical health professional, because there are so many solutions out there.
There really, really are. And I just wanted to, you know, when that study came out, I just wanted to give another perspective that I didn't think about when we wrote the paper was, you know, we got some interesting feedback from people online with regards to the male partners coming back and saying, you know, you're right. It's not okay that we're blaming people. We should not be blaming our partners for these things. However, I think one thing that your paper failed to address was how the partner who, you know, whose partner is experiencing the erectile dysfunction reacts in that moment, you know, getting made fun of, getting laughed at, being called like less of a man, stuff like that. So and I never quantified that, but I that was a perspective that I had not, you know, me and the other authors had not come up with when we had written the paper and done the study. So I think the bottom line is obviously, you know, is communication. Communication is the theme for all of this, right? You know, if you think you have a problem, go talk to a doctor. If you are experiencing a problem and it's, you know, in the moment, be careful how you communicate with your partner both ways, right? You know, you don't want to embarrass your partner. You don't want to, you know, for having this issue. You don't want to, if you're having the issue, you don't want to blame them for it. So, you know, you have to be clear with your intentions and you have to be thoughtful about what you're doing and what you're saying, because everything you do can impact someone, especially sex, because there is nothing more intimate and people are vulnerable. They are their most vulnerable selves in that moment. And that's really important to remember when you're going to the bedroom or wherever it may be.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it. People are incredibly vulnerable. And this is sometimes such a huge insecurity, as we said at the very beginning, that we often, men often consider how they perform in the bedroom to be a huge part of how they value themselves as people. Mm-hmm. So if in that moment, the penis isn't doing what we all think it should, which as we know, a lot of times it happens to 50% of people at some point. If we can't deal with that in a loving way, in a calm and understanding way, realizing that, you know, an erection is only a part of the story and there are so many reasons for it and there are so many solutions, then that is a real shame.
That was really well said. I agree 100%.
Thank you. Please, could you let us know where we can come and find you for anybody who wants to come and follow you online?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on again. I love this. I'm happy to come on again. This was great. So you can find me on all social media platforms, TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, at Justin Dubin, J-U-S-T-I-N, Dubin, D-U-B-I-N, M as in Mary, D. So you can find me there. You can find the podcast on Spotify, iTunes. Our website is The Man Up Pod. You can find us on socials at The Man Up Pod. We air episodes once every 2 weeks. Hopefully it will become weekly at some point, but it takes a lot of time, as you know. Feel free to reach out. I'm always happy to connect with listeners, and thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you, Justin. And I think we can forgive you both, two medical doctors, finding time to post a free podcast. I mean, thank you. Thank you again for being here, and I'm looking forward to hearing everyone's response to this.
Thanks again.